And now we are using technology, you know, it's to empower surgeons with new powers, with a new vision that goes beyond human vision capabilities. Suddenly, we have Marvel in our operating rooms, transforming surgeons in unnatural superheroes that could see beyond patient skin and remove the tumor safely in order to improve oncological outcomes.
Welcome to the special English edition of Der große Neustart, a German podcast series by Sibylle Baden, in which she talks to pioneering leaders who, inspired by the World Economic Forum's Great Reset Initiative, create revolutionary projects that actually do make our world smarter, greener, and fairer.
I welcome Dr. Pedro Gouveia, surgeon and designer of the breast unit of the Champalimaud Clinical Center in Lisbon. Dr. Gouveia is a trailblazer in metaverse medical procedure. In May this year, he performed the first successful breast cancer operation in the metaverse. But not only that, while he and the patient were in the operating theater in Portugal, his colleague was intervening and supervising from the University of Zaragoza in Spain, 900 kilometers away, and yet they worked in the same room. Thanks to augmented reality and 5G, artificial intelligence, and his special digital goggles, this pioneering experiment, he calls it Breast 4.0, has won him the Best and Greatest Portuguese Technology Award. Good morning, Dr. Gouveia in Lisbon, and congratulations first. All of that sounds fantastic. Please tell us everything about your breast cancer operation in the metaverse.
Hi, Sibyl, and once again, thank you very much for this kind invitation. It's a pleasure for us to be present in your podcast. So this surgery took place May 5 this year, and we wanted to prove a proof of concept that it is possible that someone far away could supervise remotely an ongoing real surgery, in this case, a breast cancer surgery. So I was in Lisbon at Champalimaud Foundation with my patient, and Rogelio Luna, my colleague, was in Spain at Zaragoza. In an international conference about breast cancer with surgeons, obviously. So what we want to showcase is that me as a mentee and Rogelio as a mentor, we could be connected not on an ordinary video conference, but I was wearing a headset of augmented reality, HoloLens 2 by Microsoft, and while the conference was ongoing, Rogelio Luna was showcasing in the screen what I could see with my headset. It means that he could be on with me on a real setting, observing and visualizing everything I could see in my field of vision, including the patient. Mm. Now, besides this ordinary video conference, now, what allowed this experiment was that Rogelio Luna, through augmented reality, was able to give me instructions about the surgical procedure. As an example, so he inserted a virtual object in my vision field within my HoloLens, looking into the patient. And this virtual object was in the form of a surgical indication about the surgical incision in the patient's breast. So he was able to suggest me where I should cut to make my incision in the patient's breast in order to remove the tumor, and most important, how to perform a partial breast reconstruction in order to avoid a volume defect that would have a major problem in terms of the aesthetic results of a breast cancer conservative surgery. So this means that why sometimes we speak about technology and why technology is important. Mm. So nowadays, what we have is that surgeons get a specific training. Sometimes they go abroad, they learn how to do it, and then they come back to their original hospital and start doing themselves surgical operations. Now, the problem is that when the mentee goes back to the hospital, he's alone. So he's going to start surgical procedures and no mentorship is available because we didn't have the tools to do it. Now, with augmented reality and 5G, now we can enter on a new era in the surgical metaverse education, where it is possible that the mentorship could continue when the mentee goes back to the hospital and his mentor could continue to help him doing what he's doing, making corrections and interacting. Now, you probably could understand that when we are driving a car and we may say, go there and go there, instead of saying go left or go right. Now, in a surgery, in a specific field of the operation, it's a small field, right? And it's really difficult if you are observing on a normal video conference and stating, go there, are you seeing that? Are you seeing the artery? So it's pretty difficult. I would say it's impossible.
Yeah.
But with the computer graphics on a video conference, like the ones that we can allow it to do on with the HoloLens, augmented reality, it means that the mentor could draw in my field of vision, what should I do, how can I do it, and also help me identifying specific anatomic structures like a vein, an artery, a node, a tumor, an organ, whatever, and to assist me and to help me to operate the patient with safety and to fulfill the oncological outcomes that here in breast cancer are very important.
Yeah. And I watched some of your YouTube videos about your breast cancer operation, and you show how to look into the patient, right? Now, we don't have the video here. Can you explain that in more detail so that we can all imagine how it works?
Well, imagine that, for example, let's forget the use case of the surgery for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine that you are operating a machine with 50 buttons, and half of them have the same color and they have different numbers. It's very hard without instructions book to operate the machine and do it immediately.
Yeah.
But now imagine that I'm looking to a machine with 50 buttons, and you are the engineer that knows all about these 50 buttons. Now imagine that I'm seeing the machine, the 50 buttons, and you are connected to my HoloLens, and you are able to see the 50 buttons. Now, in order for you to tell me, now count from right to left 10 and push the button number 10. Instead of it, you can draw a circle within the button in my field of vision. So in seconds, I can identify the right button, where should I push. So this is different because if I have to count, I can make a mistake. And if it's a serious button, you know, a button where everything will blow up, I will double count and I will lose time. Now, it means that the ability to insert computer graphics on a normal video conference on a real environment, it allows us to improve speed, action from the user, and a correct movement. Now, transponding this situation from a machine to 50 buttons to surgery, it means that I am looking to the patient, and while you are drawing an incision or pointing to a specific anatomic structure, I have this immediate image interpretation of what you are saying without any doubt, because you are pointing out a specific region of interest in what I am seeing. So this means that it allows the user to have real-time information when he most needs in an accurate way and without fault. So that's the, I don't know if I answered correctly to your question.
Yeah.
But it's the ability for the mentor to give you instant instructions that are immediately visualized and understood by your brain, by your eyes, and that allows you to proceed to a specific procedure. In this case, was a breast cancer conservative surgery.
Yeah, fascinating. And you mentioned the HoloLens several times. I also understood that you invented the, I don't know, you called it goggles, right? What did you do? How did you do that?
Well, I didn't invent the goggles. So the headset is from Microsoft. So yeah. We didn't need to invent new hardware. Everything we needed was software. We bought the hardware and a good internet connection boosted by 5G. Now, you might ask why 5G was important to this surgery. It's because of latency. Now, everybody knows what latency is, specifically because of the pandemics where everybody starts doing video conferences all the time. And most of the listeners should try this experiment when on a video conference with someone, when they turn the head to the right, there was a delay, a significant delay. So that is provided by latency. Now imagine that I'm seeing a specific, I have two pens and I am looking to one and to the other. Because of latency and a head's movement, I can point out one pen, but due to latency, my graphic information could be displaced, and is standing pointing the pen A, I could be pointing to the pen B, which will give a wrong information to the user. And we don't want that. The same thing happens if you have four cars running on a highway very close from each other. Due to latency, if I am in the command, a remote command, the four cars, if I ask them to stop immediately, both at once, due to latency, there could be a car crash. Because the cars and the sensors that allows them to check the distance between both cars, due to latency, will give a wrong information to system that will cause a crash, a car crash. Now, with 5G, what we earn is that we reduce to a maximum latency that allows us that everything, voice, video, and computer graphics instructions are all done with the minimum possible latency to avoid spatial errors, meaning to avoid saying, cut the artery, and suddenly, because of latency, I am pointing to the vein, and instead of cutting the artery, I will cut the vein or a nerve. Yeah. So that's why it's very important. So regarding healthcare, everything when we apply technology, we have to think on high fidelity. It's not something that could go, it is okay, but we need high fidelity. And we currently with Wi-Fi and 4G, that is not possible. Even with 5G, we had a problem because currently HoloLens 2 do not have 5G connection. So we have to, through a wire, connect a 5G mobile phone to the headset in order to provide a 5G connection to HoloLens 2 in order to be able to showcase that having 5G in Lisbon and 5G in Zaragoza connected through internet, we could have an optimal setting that ultimately could prove this proof of concept in breast cancer conservative surgery. Now, this was not the first time that someone did this. Regarding breast cancer, it was the first time, but other use cases, retina surgery, they were also tried before.
Yeah.
But we are really speaking in an era where these medical metaverse with high connection speed, with reducing latency, could allow healthcare to join in this new era of fast communications in order to create new proof of concepts, but always with high fidelity, because we need accuracy. At the end, we have a policy not to harm the patient with whatever technology we are applying.
Yeah. So as far as I understood that operating on a breast is particularly difficult today because the surgeons cannot really see and identify the tumor exactly. And in the medical metaverse, they are able to. Is that correct?
Well, that is different. Those are different concepts. So one concept was to showcase a proof of concept of in the medical metaverse surgical education field that a mentor could remotely supervise a mentee during an ongoing real breast cancer surgery.
Yeah.
So that is for the metaverse education. Now, the other concept is the most ambitious one, which we call Breast 4.0. It aims to create a medical device that could enable surgeons to see beyond patient skin. Now, why is this important? Well, let me tell you a small story about breast cancer. So breast cancer is the most common cancer worldwide. So before pandemics, lung cancer was the most common worldwide, and we used to say that breast cancer was the most common cancer in women. But since 2020, breast cancer has surpassed lung cancer and is nowadays the most common cancer worldwide. But on the other side, breast cancer treatment has been very effective. It means that after 10 years, more than 80% of patients will survive, which is very good. But that also gives us the responsibility to think that if survival is big, it means that these patients will live long lives with the dire consequences of treatments, either are physical or emotional. And regarding breast cancer, local treatment, the gold standard nowadays is breast cancer conservative surgery. It means that for the majority of patients, we don't need to remove the entire breast, a mastectomy, which is a mutilating surgery, and safely we can do a breast cancer conservative surgery. So we'd only need to remove the tumor instead of removing whole the breast, which will cause a major impact in the self-esteem of these patients that will be mutilated. And because of screening efforts, more and more the lesions are diagnosed in an early stage, meaning very small. Now, if we do perform for the majority of patients breast cancer conservative surgeries, and more we have small lesions, these small lesions are not palpable. Now, how the surgeon could remove the tumor if he cannot feel it? So that's why, since the beginning of breast cancer conservative surgery, we need to use invasive localization techniques that could guide the surgeon during his surgical procedure. The most used now worldwide method to localize the tumor is a metallic wire that is literally stick into the patient's breast in order to guide the surgeon towards the tumor. And on the other side, you can imagine that, you know, when we are diagnosed treating a patient with breast cancer, we have several imaging modalities like ultrasound, like mammography. I don't know if all listeners that are male, they know what is a mammography, but it's something that is, it's an exam that we acquire images from what it is inside the breast, where the patient is literally squeezed in a machine in order to diagnose suspicious lesion. And each of these modality has a clinical report. For example, breast MRI, another imaging modality. The patient is laying down on a bed, but on a prone position, meaning with the belly down, facing to the bed. And the breasts are deformed by gravity and the MRI coil. And they have also a clinical report. So that means that a surgeon, when he's facing patients with breast cancer proposing a breast cancer conservative surgery, has to do a mental cognitive fusion to understand where the tumor is. He has to analyze more than 300 images and to read different clinical reports and then to understand where it is. And because that is not enough, he has to have an invasive localization technique, like a wire guided. There are other methods, but they are all invasive. Now, Breast 4.0 started by imagining if it was possible to build a digital breast model that would be created through a fusion process between a breast MRI and a surface scan. So we start surface scanning the patients in the upright position. And if you remember, we acquired breast MRI on prone position with belly down facing to the bed. Now, this means that we needed to apply for this non-rigid registration, meaning that the breast is highly deformable because it's soft, it's a soft tissue. So we used artificial intelligence to simulate a post-transformation of this breast deformed by gravity and to simulate how it looked like when the patient is upright position, and then to fuse this simulated 3D reconstruction of the breast MRI and to fuse with the patient with a surface scan. That's how we achieved a patient-specific digital breast model with tumor included. And then we started with an experimentary concept to insert this digital breast model into augmented reality headset, HoloLens. And for the first time, we were able to produce a breast hologram with a visible tumor. And that's how Breast 4.0 started. Now, we envisioned at that time that we could create a digital and non-invasive method to localize breast cancer during a surgery, enabling surgeons with a superhuman vision that they don't have in order to treat better patients and to improve oncological outcomes and the aesthetic results. And because nowadays, we as humans, we have normal limited capabilities, and now we are using technology, you know, it's to empower surgeons with new powers, with a new vision that goes beyond human vision capabilities. Suddenly, we have Marvel in our operating rooms, transforming surgeons in unnatural superheroes that could see beyond patient skin and remove the tumor safely in order to improve oncological outcomes and aesthetic results. And that's how started this thing of Breast 4.0. Later on, we have done this experiment with remote telementoring of real breast cancer surgery. But actually, this whole new concept and this ecosystem, meaning that we are definitely entering in a new era of a real use case of the metaverse that sometimes people don't know how to define. And for surgeons, it's pretty natural, because when we are operating, we don't have access to medical information, because in order to do that, because we are completely sterilized, we have to take off our gloves, take off our clothes, go to a computer, and then wash the hands again, put the gloves again, and go to the surgery. So this setting of getting out and getting in is not possible during an ongoing surgery. And if we define metaverse as internet access through an augmented reality headset, now we could say that the surgeon could be operating a patient and having internet access with his augmented reality headset or mixed reality headset, he is able to check and to access medical information that could be on the written form or images from exams or holograms fully synchronized with the patient's body in order to allow the surgeon to see beyond patient's skin what is important for that surgery. In my case, was a tumor, but it could be a bone, it could be a vein, an artery, or other tumors in different positions. So this means that the metaverse will have a higher impact within our daily lives with patients, because it will help us to be better. And when we put the question, Why we need technology? Well, the answer is very clear and simple. To better treat our patients, to have a better results, and not because technology is fancy and we like it. So we really have to build this use case. And at the moment, as we speak, most of these use cases need research, science. So we need to start doing clinical trials within the metaverse to prove that these new methods can be compared with efficacy with the standard ones. Now, if we have a medical device that localizes tumors on a digital and non-invasive way, well, definitely everybody could understand that if it is not non-inferior to standard invasive methods, we have a big advantage because at the end, we are also speaking not only about oncological outcomes, but also quality of life. Now, no one likes, I don't know if you like, Sybil, of going to take some blood sample analysis. You know, a needle goes into your vein, you are fully awakened, and you feel the pain of the needle getting inside the vein for a small collection of blood. Now, imagine that for some reason, a woman has a breast cancer, and before surgery, she has to feel a metallic wire to be literally stick in to the patient's breast. It gives you pain, anxiety. There are some complications that may arise. And so by describing this opportunity to improve not only oncological outcomes, but also quality of life, we are fulfilling an entire benefit for the entire ecosystem, for the major stakeholders in healthcare, which are doctors, patients, and the healthcare systems. This means that the metaverse will allow doctors for rapid image interpretation and to see better beyond what they can do, even looking beyond patient skin. For patients, it will also allow a better quality of life and an improvement in the oncological outcomes. And for the healthcare systems, if technology allows surgeons to be better, to have better outcomes, it means that they could have better results and avoid second surgeries because the tumor was not removed completely. Now, if we save on re-excisions and we have good oncological outcomes and don't need to spend more money treating that patient, also means that healthcare systems gain efficiency and that the money we save on second surgeries, we can invest that money into better drugs to treat cancer. So we are looking to something that could bring sustainability into the healthcare ecosystem using a new technology that, besides that, needs to prove his way. So it has a fantastic way ahead, but clinical trials must to be started. There are some hurdles also to solve, but we need to prove that this technology can replace standard methods regarding, for example, breast cancer surgery.
Before we go further into that medicine 4.0 and the fourth industrial revolution, which you talk a lot about, can I just be very clear that I understood it correctly? You, with your new technology, you are able to operate the tumor. You basically pinpoint it, take it out without damaging the breast. Right now, with the conservative approach, we don't know exactly where it is because we haven't got your technology. Let's say a doctor here, I'm in the south of France, a doctor hasn't got the technology here, and the chances that we are very invasive and probably half destroy the breast are much higher than with your technology. Is that correct? Have I understood that correctly?
Well, first of all, potentially that is the vision, but what we are doing here is research. So This is a research product that is very immature. So I would say that if we apply the technology readiness level classification, we are between 3 and 4. So we are seeking now validation of this system with patients within a clinical trial. But with this technology, we could completely remove the tumor on a surgery. So the surgery will not change. We still have to cut the skin to get inside the patient's breast and to remove the tumor. The difference is that instead of having a wire pointing where the tumor is, that can be inaccurate and ultimately could lead to a situation where after tumor removal, we find out in pathology lab results that we have positive margins and there could be cancer cells inside the patient's breast that was not removed, not because the surgeon was not good, but because the surgeon cannot see where the tumor is or microscopic cancer cells, obviously. So with augmented reality, with metaverse, we can apply a new imaging modality with fusion from a surface scan to a breast MRI, transfer this model to a whole lens, allow the surgeon to look into the patient's breast and immediately recognize the tumor inside the patient's breast in the form of an hologram. Now that gives us the ability to immediately know where the tumor is. So it's a tactical image that is instantly interpreted by the surgeon and allows us to make my immediate preoperative planning inside the operating room and go for tumor removal.
It is a new talk because from what you are saying, with the new technology, you are also able to improve the patient's entire emotional journey. If women know that the whole procedure is so much more advanced and professional and, of course, less invasive, it must be an enormous relief for patients.
Well, we can
in your trials.
we can reimagine an entire patient journey. So it starts with imaging registration. Pre-operative setting. So we have to study the patient to make the exams, to do proper planning. And then for the patient, we will avoid an unnecessary exam of wire placement that is always painful. So one procedure less to be pointed to the patient. And the procedure that we will have no, that patient suffers with pain when he's in the process. So definitely we could remove one exam, one painful exam, and replacing it through technology with a digital non-invasive technique. And that is for tumor localization. But the metaverse in surgical patients are not only related to tumor localization. Now there are ongoing trials. So we did not start that yet at Champalimo Foundation, but we intend to do next year. But imagine also that you are using a virtual reality headset in your head, and you know that you have a cancer, that you are going to the operating room, and obviously you are nervous. You feel anxiety because you're going to be someone is going to put you sleeping, and there will be a tumor removal. So of course it's something that scares patients. And there are a lot of trials that are starting right now where patients before when they are already in the surgical bed but not inside the operating room, they are waiting for their time. So there are some trials where we put a virtual reality headset into the patient's head, and while they are waiting for the surgery, they are experimenting a new form of entertainment, but with a very clear clinical objective to diminish anxiety. We are trying to boost and to improve quality of life of patients in a crucial moment, which is the moment that precedes surgery where the patient is still awake. So there is an entire ecosystem that goes from metaverse education to metaverse surgery to metaverse emotions control before surgery. And, if you think how much an operating room costs or the machines that we use, they cost.
How much does it cost?
That,
Sorry.
Well, the most expensive equipment that can be in a hospital, they are normally on the radiation department, imaging, and in the operating room. So because it's a specific structure and controlled one. But if you imagine that with for example, the Quest 2 headset from Meta that cost around 500 and 600 euros, you can with not you can spend not so much money, but to offer instantly quality of life to these patients with these new forms that it's inspiring that you can replace a pill, for example, a tranquilizer, with an immersive content that is purely natural. Nowadays, Europe is seeking bio food, and what about in specific settings, try to replace drugs to diminish anxiety and put a headset to the patient, improving how he feels, diminishing anxiety. So helping him to be calm for the moment that will happen a few minutes after that when the anesthesiologist arrive and put the patient sleeping. So I think we are living a moment where patients will feel a full impact of these new immersive technologies that will help not only doctors, but only patients in their daily journeys. We just need to prove this because everybody can understand that most of, for sure, it will work, but in healthcare, we need proof. So we need clinical trials to set up clinical outcomes to prove in terms of statistics that there is a statistically significant advantage of using this technology and comparing this technology to the other one. So that is science work that needs to be done, and for sure we will do it.
Which reminds me of watching your Future of Health recording, and you basically said that medicine 4.0 is powered by artificial intelligence and augmented reality. And you divide it into three pillars, basically the healthcare system, clinical practice, the digital patient. Can you go into a bit more detail here?
My point of view comes from reading also what other colleagues said. And there is a particular US cardiologist, Eric Topol, that I love what he writes. And in 2019, on a special issue about artificial intelligence in medicine published by Nature, he has published a beautiful paper talking about the convergency of artificial intelligence with humans towards high-performative medicine. And he has made this division between the different healthcare stakeholders for doctors, for patients, and for the healthcare systems. Now, when we think artificial intelligence, sometimes we think on humanoid, on robots, but that's not how artificial intelligence is making its first successful steps in medicine. So artificial intelligence is tackling doctors by allowing them for rapid image interpretation. Give you an example. Nowadays, there are several apps that are currently being used to detect through a picture took by a mobile phone if the patient has a high probability of having a melanoma or not. It means that you have an app, you take a picture to a skin lesion, and the app will give you with more accuracy than a human being what is the likelihood of that skin lesion could be a melanoma, a skin cancer. So it means that if we apply artificial intelligence on computer vision, so through images and not only through robots and humanoids that comes on from science fiction movies. Actually, nowadays, it's through computer vision, a field of artificial intelligence, that we have the most successful use cases in healthcare regarding this convergency of artificial intelligence and humans to a high performative medicine. So it means that we can clearly, in a matter of seconds, instead of waiting 30 minutes analyzing hundreds of images and reading different clinical reports, we can access rapid image interpretation using AI algorithms in order to assist a doctor to do a better and a fast diagnosis, and also helping us to reduce medical errors. Because we doctors, we are humans, and sometimes we make mistakes, but those mistakes can have a serious impact on patients. So why not to use technology to boost our performance in what we are doing, either for diagnosis or for treatment? So that is the main advantage that is being applied for doctors using AI. Now, for patients, obviously, they will have advantages regarding to better diagnosis, better treatments, quality of life. But the main advantage is that with AI, patients will get access to their own medical data. Now, I can put you a question. Sybil, do you have your digital healthcare data? And
no.
You will say to me, yeah, I have some printed PDF with my blood sample analysis results. I have my data. But you don't have. You have papers. That is not digital data. Hospitals own your own healthcare data, and you cannot have access to them, so that you cannot boost your own research regarding your health or your disease and how to better treat it. So with AI, definitely patients that today are a nobody, and Mr. Eric Topol wrote a book about this, and patients will become the chief operating officer of the healthcare ecosystem, meaning that by gaining access to their own healthcare data, they could promote their health and also treatment, finding better places to be treated. And we should be proud as Europeans that the European Commission has set up a new directive that in 5 years, we have to start sharing healthcare data, the interoperability in the healthcare sector that does not exist today, neither in the United States. But we have now a goal that in 5 years, healthcare data could be exchanged and patients could easily get access to it. And not by the way they do it today, that they beg for a CD with an MRI in the hospitals or for a clinical report, because everything is secured and closed within hospitals. That is wrong. You know, now when you are using a new technology to put some justice in the system, everybody will say, yes, I want that. Definitely. I want to have access to my healthcare data to promote my own health. And if I am sick, to promote my disease treatement. So that is will be the biggest impact regarding patients, getting them access to their own healthcare data. Now, for healthcare systems, it's much more logical and easy to explain. So if this interaction between doctors and patients is better and improved by artificial intelligence, then the healthcare systems will gain efficiency and they could control their mission that is balanced through sustainability. So treat better, new drugs, they cost more money. And if in the workflow on the patient journey, I can turn down everything or the whole process more efficient, then I can reallocate resources when they are most needed for the most expensive treatment in order to give an advantage to patient to improve not only survival, but also quality of life. And so I would say that healthcare 4.0 will benefit definitely all stakeholders. And this digital transformation of having nowadays physical patients in hospitals will be transformed into a new concept that will have physical patients and digital patients. And why is this important? Well, if you anyone can understand that we have less than 1% of the healthcare data of a patient, because, and we are happy with it, he passes less than 1% of his time outside the hospital. It means that we only record information when the patients go to hospital to see the doctor, the nurse, to do an exam. And so we can rely on these new technologies to boost the information that we get from patients. So it means that we have the information from the hospitals, but we also could expand data retrieval from patients with wearables and IoT of what is happening outside the hospital's ecosystem. And this means a completely new interaction, new data to analyze, and to boost something that people now want to know more about their own body, body composition, my exercise, what do they do, and to see the ongoing results of my efforts to stay healthy, to have better options, but always with respect. So at the end, we should always respect even the patients or the persons that don't want to stay healthy, because we are living in a democracy, and I have to respect, as I respect patients that refuse treatments because they have the right to it. But at the end, better and more offers to the patients, it can be really be an advantage to society and to people.
Pedro, you as a breast surgeon and the Champalimaud Foundation are in the forefront of science. How long does the transformation take? What is your prediction?
Well, I would say that for patients to gain full access to their own care, to their own healthcare data, I think the next 5 years will be crucial. I expect that in 10 years, that vision of total access to healthcare data and the usage of and the power of AI implementation, we could see the first results, robust results in 10 years. Because, when we're speaking about cancer, for example, we need to check survival and quality of life. So if you start something this year, a proper evaluation needs 5 years to see survival, relapses, quality of life issues through questionnaires that are perfectly established. So it's not something that it is immediate. So it means that although we think that the metaverse is here, we have to mature the use cases, do clinical trials, and to prove that this technology could truly be helpful for patients. And we need those numbers. Research needs to be done to mature these technologies in order for them to be used on a daily practice within hospital clinics and in patients' homes.
Talking about numbers, during my research, and we discussed it yesterday briefly on LinkedIn, I found out that in 2020, the world saw 2.3 million new cases of breast cancer. And the frightening revelation for me was it seems to be mainly an illness of Western societies, because according to the World Cancer Research Fund, the top 10 countries with the highest incidence are all in the Western world, led by, let me take a look, led by Belgium and followed by the Netherlands, Luxembourg, Denmark, United States. Have you got an explanation for that?
Well, you see, if we go back 150 years, median life expectancy was 40. So most of the people died with infections. We did not have antibiotics. It means that through pills, we have boosted our longevity. Now people live the double after 150 years. From 40, we passed it for more than 80. Now, with aging, new disease have arrived through mainly through three categories: cardiovascular disease, neurological disorders, and cancer. So you may say that these three diseases are a product of aging process. Now, cancer as an aging process is also related to our lifestyle, meaning that Cancer risk is mainly affected by our lifestyle. I'll give you an example. In Japan, gastric cancer is very common. And if you go to the United States, in terms of digestive cancers, colorectal cancer is the prevalent cancer in the digestive organ system. So it means that we have gastric cancer in Japan and colorectal cancer in the US. Now, when Japan citizens move to US to live in the US, so Japanese immigrants establish it in the United States, the first generation remains with high levels of gastric cancer incidence. But the second generation start to have higher incidence of colorectal cancer and to lower incidence of gastric cancer. And the second and the third and the fourth generation, they will look like Americans in terms of their colorectal cancer incidence. It means that changing dietary habits has allowed a change in cancer incidence from a high prevalence of gastric cancer to a high prevalence of colorectal cancer. Now, if you look into breast cancer, which is the most common cancer worldwide, there are several things that affect breast cancer incidence. For example, alcohol. More and more, there is a highly relationship between cancer and alcohol consumption. It means that it's easy to explain. So there is, most of tumors are boosted by hormones. Now, alcohol transforms into fat, and fat transforms into estrogens. Now, if you have more estrogens in your body, you have a higher likelihood of having a breast cancer. And how the and this is how alcohol consumption could change a healthy environment to a prone environment to get a cancer. Obesity. So if you have a lot of fat cells in your body, some of that, those fat cells will transform into estrogens. This means that these that having more estrogens, female hormones, could also put a patient in risk of getting a breast cancer. Then exercise also. So we can speak about dietary habits, lifestyle, exercise, stress, people that don't eat at the right time, they don't sleep well. It's an entire wrong lifestyle that get people into serious ill conditions. That could be cancer, it could be cardiovascular, hypertension, infarct, heart attack. But this means that, you know, there is a new concept that is starting also in the in Europe and in United States. So we had normal appointments and we moved to this longevity thing of regarding aging with specialized appointments, doctors to doing these specialized medicine to boost longevity on patients. And now we are also have doctors and the new ecosystem that is being created about lifestyle. So how to put patients on and or how to put persons that are not patients on the right track to help them to remain as healthy as they can. This job needs to start at schools, how to teach the youngest how to eat well, and also in our homes. This means that, for example, Mediterranean countries have one of the best dietary habits in the world. So Portugal, Spain, South of France, Italy. In Italy, we have some communities where they have the most longevity scores that we have in the entire world. That is because we have a diverse diet with fresh fish, also with meat, vegetables, fruits, soup. And so we need to take care on how to eat well. It is important for us to spend time to cook our own food and ought to be based on sandwiches, lunches, lunch that we most of the Europeans do like it, but it's not healthy, you know, with creams, with mayonnaise, with all those processed food that at the end will the your cancer risk will rise because what you have done millions of times during your entire life, at not taking breakfast and then eating something in the middle of the morning, and then eat a lot and processed food, sandwiches at lunch, not doing exercise, smoking. So smoking also has a risk factor for breast cancer. And so we really need to, in our freedom, we can do whatever we want. But then you have to accept the consequences if you didn't work to stay on a healthy pathway.
If I absolutely agree with you. If I look at this statistic that with over 70% of all new cases and 81% of all deaths observed in women aged 50 and above, that is terrifying. Does it mean especially women lived really a wrong life?
Let's try to avoid the term, the wrong lives.
Yeah.
So people, I always like to, people make their own option. And as European, I believe in freedom. But I also believe that your freedom is attached to responsibilities and consequences that you must accept. So if you don't want to take responsibility of or take in charge of that consequences, so you have to think earlier, you have to be educated in order to stay on the right track. This means that we cannot sell chocolates and unnaturally juices in schools, because otherwise we will teach our kids that eating juice, drinking juices and eating chocolates, it's normal and it's something that is encouraged, which it should not be. So that means that we have to take care, to be careful to what we teach to our kids, the habits, what they learn with the adults. And so we have to remain on the safe side if we want to have our, to boost our longevity. Obviously, inevitably, sometimes things go wrong and you didn't did anything wrong, because biology is like that. So you have always done a healthy lifestyle and then you have a terrible disease. It's unfair. Obviously, it's unfair. But we are speaking about mathematical models, meaning that if you generally apply to a general population a healthy lifestyle, you have a statistical advantage of having reduced cancer incidence in that specific population. That is public health, and governments in Western countries have ways to make new policies in order to protect their populations, and even in companies. So more and more, sometimes nowadays when someone is seeking a job, he's not only looking for money, for a salary, he's also looking for quality of life. Can I work remote part of the time? Can I have access to gym in the, in at work, so I can work in the gym, and in my workplace, I also have access to a gym to do my exercise. If I have an insurance healthcare policy, and if that comes with benefits, meaning imagine that you are, I am obese, I'm getting into a new job and they pay me an healthcare insurance policy, and I have benefits if I reduce my weight, meaning that there is an agreement between the company, the worker, and the insurance company, that if that worker reduces his weight, so less likelihood of having disease. So the insurance company will benefit. The worker will also benefit by boosting his health, and the company will also gain, because if that worker does not get sick, he will not have to take a leave of the job. He will continue working. So it's a benefit to these three stakeholders, just because they are all taking care of the worker healthcare. And that brings sustainability to a specific company ecosystem. So we need to rethink on how to give bonus and benefits to the workers, that they try to remain healthy, and give them an option and a prize if they are on the right track. And I think this is, I know, well, we may say that this may affect freedom. It means that I won't get extra vacation days because I want to continue to eating a lot. Well, but, you know, I think it's for a good reason. And I think that if we are not extreme, we can really help us to setting a new lifestyle where benefits can affect several stakeholders when everybody could be happy in an inclusive society. And we are, I like to think that we Europeans are just like that.
Coming back to your work and what you do, I mean, you're a very young doctor who has achieved a lot in a very short time. Where do you see yourself in the next few years and all that technological transformation?
Well, I'm pretty excited to work where I work at Champalimaud Foundation. And we are living a moment where we are trying to be hybrid. So I will not move away to the technology field. I will always continue to be a surgeon because I like to be with patients and I like to be on the problem side in order to find the best solutions through technology to help patients and doctors. And here at Champalimaud Foundation, we are challenging moments coming up ahead. For the first time, we are trying. So Champalimaud Foundation was born 10 years ago, a nonprofit organization. And it started with a neuroscience fundamental research program. Later on, a clinical cancer care program was established in a Champalimaud Foundation. And since the beginning, the board wanted that the neuroscience research team could connect and make research with the clinical cancer care program. Now, this is not obvious because, you know, neuroscience deals with neuronal circuits and how can we connect neuronal circuits with the cancer cell? So it's pretty hard. So how we find a way of working together was through immersive content, through augmented and virtual reality. Why? Because we were applying medical XR in our research using augmented reality, allowing surgeons to see beyond patient skin and new forms of remote telementoring. And in the neuroscience, you know, fundamental neuroscience research, they work with animal models. So we have a vivarium at our facility with mouses and fishes, and they study behavior on mouses on specific conditions using augmented reality. So they simulate a specific ecosystem to perform their experiments with mouses. So we find out that augmented reality and immersive content was a common methodology between both research teams that worked on a very different manners. So they work with animals, we work with patients. And the fun of it is that at Champalimaud Foundation, you have something unique that you cannot find anywhere else in the world. So we have doctors, we have patients, we have researchers, we have engineers, we have animals. Sometimes you have a great hospital with great doctors and great patients, but no engineers, no animals. Then you have full buildings of technology buildings with engineers, with machines, advanced equipment, but the hospital is far away, the patients also. Then you have industries that build new drugs, but they don't have the animals, they don't have the patients, neither the doctors. And over there, we have this new ecosystem that was built in freedom, where everybody shares the same canteen. So it's a space where you can mix ideas. It took us 10 years to achieve it, but now we have this responsibility of working together, bring also sustainability to research in order to each one of us in their specific use cases, we can be successful, but using something that is shareable in research. And so I can see continue working here. And, you know, there is an excitement about what is going to happen when you mix so completely different fields of knowledge from fundamental neuroscience research to surgeons that deal with cancer every day or oncologists. And I'm really excited to see what this is going to produce in the upcoming years, working together on a way that was not experimented before because we will be on the same place every day. And so obviously interactions will happen and new ideas that we didn't think about it will arise with the youngest that will join us and start living this mixed environment will allow us to do better things at the end to improve patients' lives.
Picking up on new ideas, and that will be also my last question because you are a very busy doctor and we have got 2 more minutes. I noticed that the Champalimaud Foundation has a center for the unknown. What is the center for the unknown?
Well, people might think that is an awkward name, but it means that. So next year, I will make 10 years of Champalimaud Foundation. One of the things that I most appreciate and I'm grateful to work here is freedom. So everyone has freedom to think on new ideas, to propose them and to execute them. No matter if on the beginning, very unlikely that you can be successful, but they give you that freedom. So if you take your mission seriously, not as a normal job, but as a mission, you can be free. You just have to write on a paper what you want. It will be approved. And then we help you to get your funded. And so they give you also certain a coach during your career, not only as a doctor but as a researcher, to give you the tool that you need to do and to fulfill your mission. And that is the center of the unknown. We never know what is going to happen because we are not blocked to an idea. We welcome new ideas. That's how suddenly a surgical team start working with an imaging team and with neuroscience, because we were able to find something that could unite us. It was not obvious at the end, but you know, there is this common feeling of freedom, of the unknown. And you know, through time, humans were always very curious and excited with the unknown. It's an open question, and that brings you passion and makes you feel that you really want to dream and you really want to navigate in that space that we call the unknown.
That was very beautiful. It's also a very beautiful concept, and it seems you work at the almost, not almost, you work at the perfect place. And all I can say is thank you very much, Dr. Gouveia, and I wish you all the success and the happiness, and that you keep on coming up with better and better ideas. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sibyl, and I invite you to visit us at Champalimaud Foundation whenever you want. You are very welcome, and I would love to receive you here.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a special English edition of Der große Neustart, a German podcast series by Sibylle Baden, in which she talks to pioneering leaders who are committed to making our world smarter, greener, and fairer. For more information, please visit www.sibyllebaden.com and the official site of the World Economic Forum.